at other times. And there is some research on fat, as you know, and the fast food places know that you put a lot of fat and stuff with salt, and you and people seem to love it, and some people seem to get addicted. But I'm not here to tell you that that's your problem. That's my problem. I cannot eat foods high in fat content. I can't eat dairy fats at all. I have real problems with dairy fats. And so I do not have anything made with cream or butter, and I avoid all foods that are high in dairy fats. I also avoid all foods. I avoid deep fried foods. I avoid foods that are high in fat content. I look at the fat content in the nutrition labeling, and I have a certain limit to the amount of fat that I can have in a meal. That's one thing I do. After about 6 months of doing that, I had lost my interest in eating any foods that were high in fat content, and I achieved that freedom from bondage that the Big Book promises. But I hadn't lost much weight. So I realized I had to lose weight, and I realized that it was important for me to share my recovery by having a healthy body weight. I began to analyze things even further, and I looked then at eating behaviors. And I began to realize that I have certain eating behaviors which are so ingrained in me that they influence the volume of the food and therefore the caloric totals of what I eat. I have two in particular. One of them is the need to chew all the time, which was being fed by these diet plans that said eat carrots and celery and chew sugarless gum and stuff like that. The need to chew all the time, and all my teeth are capped or non-existent, because I've broken them on bones, I've broken them in hard candies, I've broken them in popcorn kernels, which I've eaten and eaten and eaten, sometimes in very small caloric quantities, like popcorn without butter or oil or anything like that. But I've broken them. My mouth is a living example of this need to chew and eat all the time. I eliminated that. Three meals a day, nothing in between. And that stopped. Because what would happen, I'd eat these non-caloric things during the day, and then in my regular meals, the quantities would get higher because my saliva was going and I wanted more. So I did that. And the other eating behavior that I eliminated was the need to feel full right up to the top of my neck, And I realized that I have to find a way to eliminate that eating behavior. And I found a few different ways. And one of them right off the bat was I could sort of imagine stopping at my belly button. Now, those of you who have a medical background, I've been corrected on this, will tell me that my stomach starts at the belly button. It doesn't go below the belly button. I sort of think it must, but at any rate, I know what it means to be full to the belly button rather than to be full to the top of my neck. But I have a very close friend in the program who says to me, I have no idea when I'm full to the belly button. And that person, a very good friend of mine, weighs and measures his food. I don't have a problem with that. He is abstaining from his volume addiction by limiting the quantities that go into his food in a way that makes sense to him. I sometimes have a need to limit the quantities by saying I'm only going to have one serving. No problem. I weigh and measure one particular thing I eat in the morning because I have found that when I don't weigh and measure it, I eat more than I need to of it because it doesn't sort of fill me up that much, and yet it's very nutritious. Every person has to develop his or her own eating behavior issue. You may have an eating, you may not. Chances are you do. It deals with volume. Certainly bulimics, anorexics have to abstain from their non-eating behaviors or their purging behaviors or things of that sort because those are behaviors that allow them to continue to have the craving for not eating or for eating too much, depending on the particular issues. I'm not going to spend any more time on the abstaining other than to point out a few things. And I encourage you, if you have any concerns, I'm happy to talk with you. And the website has a little link to contact the webmaster, whatever. Just click on that link and you'll get an email if you want to email me. I'd be happy to talk to anyone and cross-examine them as I do my sponsees. I'm a lawyer. I have the right to. And cross-examine them on whether they're truly being honest with themselves. But honesty is the issue. Are you really abstaining from foods that you know cause you problems? Or are you holding some back? Are you and I have found over the years, it's been amazing for me, I've eliminated a whole bunch of foods that are clearly healthy but cause me uncontrollable cravings. I developed, it's no secret of how to make a blueberry imitation ice cream by taking frozen blueberries, mixing them with skim milk yogurt, and adding a little bit of sweetener. Well, I found I have an addiction to the creamy sweetness, even though there's no thick creamy sweetness, even though there's no caloric issues there. I mean, I just needed that. I look forward to that so much that if I didn't have it, I'd be cranky. I knew I had to eliminate that. So that's an eating behavior, clearly an eating behavior of needing this creamy sweetness that I have to eliminate. That's me. It may not be you. And I always say to sponsees, do not accept my plan of eating. Learn from it if you can, that I try to be as honest as I can with it. So over the years, I've added things, but I'm not going to speak any more about that, other than to say that on two places in the big book, right at the bottom of page XXVI of the doctor's opinion, or XXIV of the third, in the third edition, and right across the page on the bottom of the next page, more often than not, it is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached. And then the doctor says, of course an alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving for liquor. I can't believe in this program that we don't make it so clear. Abstinence has to be done. And that's what step one is. It's part of what step one is all about, is you start off with getting sober. You clear your mind. How can you be rigorously honest and do the steps if you're lying to yourself and to others about what you're eating? Now, I don't even need to say that it's from the big book. I had the experience. I have a good friend of mine in the program who knew more about the big book than I did. And was a big book thumper. It was an AA, NA, and OA. And he asked me to sponsor him. I said, great, let's work out a plan of eating for you. I was very humble because, believe me, he knew more than I did, but I'd been absent longer. He said, I can't get abstinent. I said, what do you mean? I can't get abstinent. He said, you've been in AA for, I don't know, 20 years at the time. What would you say to a person who said, I'm going to continue to drink, but I'm just hoping that these steps will give me clarity of mind so that I won't go back to drinking. I won't tell you exactly what he said, but I would tell him to go away, he said. I said, what do you want me to say to you? He said, please, I can't stop, but please, let's do this. Well, we did the steps together. I was always asking to get abstinent, he wouldn't. He did a step 4 and 5. He said they were very powerful step 5s. He made amends even. And tragically, and he continued to go OA, but he never got abstinent, and he ultimately committed suicide. I've never been to a more powerful funeral. It was 400 members of AA, NA, and OA who would have done anything for this tremendously lovable man, and he died alone. I don't need much of a life experience to know that if you're an abstinent, you can't do the steps in the way the big book suggest. There may be occasional people who have recovered in the other way. That's not what our program stands for. Abstinence starts, and that's what the big book certainly stands for. So, no more on that. I want to go on. I'm not going to talk about Bill's story much because I don't have much time. I will point out, however, that although it's tough sometimes to read Bill's story from the perspective of an OA, because he was the classic drunk. He was the stereotypical drunk. He was the gutter drunk. He had the stories about, you know, one more, and, you know, he lectures on why he can't drink anymore, and then he goes off and has a little click in his mind, and suddenly goes back to drinking. And we're not like, and most of us are not dramatic. I mean, OAers, you know, alcohol may be a stimulant to many alcoholics, as drugs may be a stimulant to many drug takers. Gambling can be a stimulant to gamblers. But the net effect of compulsive eating, whether it's lack of eating or too much eating, on compulsive eaters, is to make us more and more lethargic. You know, we are not normally dramatic people. And so our lives, you almost have to speed us up as if you were running a month-long movie in a day to get any sense of the equivalent to the alcoholic picture that Bill provides. But his story is a story of a gradual decline that is stopped, that in which he meets Dr. Silkworth, and Dr. Silkworth talks to him about the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, and he says, I got it licked with an allergy to the body. I know I can no longer have so much as one drink. And he continues to drink. And then he's visited by Ebbie Thatcher, and Ebbie Thatcher has had this concept. And Bill has this sense, here's a man I've known for years who was a drunk, who was, I used to say evidently, if I ever get as bad as Ebbie, I'll have to stop drinking. And here he was, Ebbie was not drinking, and Bill was. I mean, it's this marvelous kitchen table story that's found on pages 8 and 9. Page 9, the door opened and he stood there fresh skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. He evidently said, I'm not drinking. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had gone into the fellow. He wasn't himself. And here comes a sentence which is so typically Bill and is so typical of why, and is an example of why the big book is sometimes very hard to read. Come, what's all this about? I queried. You know, this is not language that normal people use these days. But anyway, and then Ebbie says, I've got religion. And this starts Bill off in a 2.5-page rant about religion, which I'll talk about tomorrow. And I may talk about it. No, I'll talk about it later on this morning, actually, because it's a step two issue. And Ebbie then says, no, you don't have to have religion. You just have to be willing to try the program. Bill gets drunk again, and there's great stories. You know, if you read AA Comes of Age, it's a great book, and it's his history of AA that's told in a brilliant way, brilliant way. He goes on a drinking binge, and finally he decides to go back to the town's hospital for the fourth time. He buys four bottles of beer. He drinks three of them. He walks to the town's hospital holding the fourth. He says, Dr. Silkworth, this time I think I have something. Dr. Silkworth says, yes, you have, my boy. And that's how they talked about themselves in those days, and puts him to dry out. 3 days later, Ebbie visits him, brings him a copy of William James's Variety of Religious Experience. Bill says, well, what is this program again? Tell me about this program. And Ebbie says something like this, and you can find this in a few different places, with Best in Language of the Heart, another AA publication of Bill's writings from the grapevine. Well, you know, Ebbie says, you get honest with yourself. You get honest with another human being. You make up for the wrongs you've done. You pray to God for guidance. And you give of yourself without hope of reward or prestige. That's the simple program that Ebbie gave him. You get honest with yourself, step 4. You get honest with another human being, step 5. You make up for the wrongs you've done, steps 8 and 9. You pray for guidance, step 11. And you give of yourself without hope of reward or prestige, step 12. Those were the steps. Now, what happened with Bill was that he had Dr. Silkworth's analysis of the problem, which Ebbie did not have. This is Joe and Charlie, I'm sure you've heard this. And Bill was able to add a sixth step, which was, you're hopeless. He knew he was hopeless. He knew he couldn't stop from starting again, and he knew that once he started, he couldn't stop. So he knew he was in a vicious circle, which is yo-yo dieting. It's everything it's all the reasons we've ever given up on our diet. So Bill was able to add this tremendous sense of despair to the program that Ebbie was offering that he got from the Oxford groups. And the program from the Oxford groups was designed to get anyone a spiritual experience. Bill was able to add this first step of despair and graft together a program which ultimately had the problem, step 1, the solution, step 2, the steps of the solution, steps 4 through 12, 3 through 12. And that was ultimately his brilliant, Bill was obviously inspired, if not brilliant, maybe both. The chapter there is a solution is notable for a number of reasons. And again, I'm really skipping through this book, and I'm sorry for that, but I got to get all this done in a short time. I want to point out on page 17, and I'll just point this out, I'm not going to read everything. The writers of the big book say, we aren't held together by the fact that we suffer a common problem. We're not even held together by the fact that we have recovered. We are held together as a fellowship by the fact that we have a common solution, a common way out, upon which we all agree. Because the fellowship existed after, in a sense, after the book was published. The fellowship was named after the book. The book wasn't named after the fellowship. The first meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous were held in Cleveland after the book was published, when Clarence S. decided to name them. When there was, they hived off from these Oxford groups meetings, the drunk groups of the Oxford groups, in order to establish an independent Alcoholics Anonymous. We exist for the propagation of the steps. We exist to find other people with our problem to help them recover. We are the embodiment of step 12. That's what our fellowship is. And until we understand that, we don't understand what our meetings are for. They're not coffee classes. They're not places where you say, do you want to have more cheese with your wine? They're not places where we say, they're there. I don't think they're even places where we say, oh, keep coming back. It works if you work it and bring a lot of love. They are. There's nothing wrong with saying that. I'll talk about that later. But they are places where we ought to be saying, we have a solution. We're striving toward that solution. If you have our problem, we have the solution that will work for you. It has worked for us, and probably it will work for you. If you want to do what we have learned works for us. So there is a solution. They talk about, in various places, the purpose of it. I just want to point out a few things. Page 20, they distinguish between what the Big Book calls an alcoholic, a real alcoholic, and moderate and hard drinkers. I think that's very important, a very important distinction, one that we can learn from. They talk about moderate drinkers are people who sometimes drink and then can give it up relatively easily if they realize it's not good for them. And they also talk about hard drinkers, who may have trouble giving it up, but can give it up if a good enough reason, family or illness or something, comes to them. But on page 21, they say, but what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. So even a moderate drinker could be an alcoholic. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. So the definition of a real alcoholic is a person who has the allergy of the body. And as we'll see, also we'll have this obsession of the mind. But I think it's really important because it's not as if I have to have a history of weighing 500 pounds. I didn't when I joined. You know, I weighed a lot. I was heavy. And I've lost a lot. I have no idea how much I weighed because, hey, I stopped weighing. And there aren't any pictures of me because, hey, I was a photographer. You know, but I was heavy. But I was never morbidly obese. So that's it. On page 22, they start to discuss the allergy of the body. And I think it's important to read this answer. Why does he take that one drink? Why does the alcoholic keep going back? The Big Book says, perhaps there never will be a full answer to these questions. Opinions vary considerably as to why the alcoholic reacts differently from normal people. We are not sure why, once a certain point is reached, little can be done for him. We cannot answer the riddle. We are not therapists, psychologists, you know, deep thinkers about our problem. We don't know why we have it. We don't care. We have a solution. That's all we care about. There's all kinds of research on what causes our physical problem. It may be different for different people. It's not worth thinking about. As long as we acknowledge within ourselves that there are times and once we start, we can't stop, and we figure out what it is that does that to us, whether it's an eating behavior or whether it's a food or a food ingredient. We have to figure that out, and we abstain from it. Our real problem then begins. When I sponsor people and I say, okay, you've got a plan of eating that is honestly your plan of eating, you're happy with that? Well, they'll often say I'm sad with that, but I accept it. I say, okay, you're now on a race. Either your mind is going to send you back to that food, or you're going to work through step 9 and recover in time to keep your mind from sending you back. You're in a race. And the sooner you do the steps and the faster you do the steps powerfully, correctly, well, the more chance you have of not being persuaded by your mind to go back. So it's simple. So they say on page 23, the observations of once starting you can't stop, they say these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. Obviously it does. If we have a physical problem, normal people, accept their physical problems. What are they going to do? They're not going to throw, you know, it's like that, the Black Knight and the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you know, if you remember that, you know, where King Arthur says, I don't want to fight with you. I'm the greatest sword fighter in the world. No, you're not. No, you're not. Let's fight. And Arthur slices his arms off, his blood spurting out, you know. Well, it's butt heads, you know. I just cut off your arms. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Mere scraps, you know. And then he cuts off the legs and, you know, let's bite each other. No, but you can't even walk. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. But we're not in denial here. Or we are in denial, I should say. But it's obvious that our problem is in our mind. And they go on page 23, second last full paragraph, right at the bottom of that paragraph, there is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game. That's the first mention of an obsession. And an obsession is an idea which takes control of the mind to the exclusion of other ideas. That's what the whole chapter of More About Alcoholism is about. And I think that I will go on to there. You're going to miss the whole story of Dr. Jung. Sorry about that. Fascinating story. Other than to say that Carl Jung, the great psychoanalyst, many people think of him as kind of a little weird, but he certainly had an impact on AA, and Bill Wilson actually sent a letter to Dr. Jung just before Dr. Jung died. Coincidence? I think so. But not everyone does. Dr. Jung treated a guy who was a hopeless alcoholic for, historians differ on how long, but at any rate, the guy felt that at the end of this treatment in 1932 that he really understood everything about his mind and would never drink again, and on the voyage back to the States, he drank. And he went back to Jung, he says, what's my problem? Jung says, you're hopeless, I can't help you, no one can help you. The guy says, is there no hope? And Jung says, well, the only way you can get there is by a spiritual experience, which somehow has occurred over the years through alcoholics, over the history of time, which is a spirit in which the way of thinking and the whole approach to life changes. He says, I could produce that in ordinary people, but I've never been able to produce an alcoholic. And this guy, Roland, says, well, I'm a deacon of the church. I mean, isn't that good? No, he says, you need a spiritual experience. You need something that just changes you. And for Dr. Jung, it was a sudden conversion experience. It turns out to have been different for 12-step people. But Roland then found these Oxford groups, which has this simple concept. You get honest with yourself, you get honest with another human being, you make up for the wrongs you've done, you pray to God for guidance, and you help others without hope of reward or prestige. He recovered, no longer drank, carried the message to Ebby, who then carried the message to Bill, who combined it with Dr. Silver. And Jung, it's interesting, in his letter back to Bill Wilson, says, I believe that the thirst for alcohol is a very low-level thirst for wholeness, a low-level version of a spiritual thirst for wholeness. We could easily say spiritual hunger for wholeness. That the real problem is we are cut off from our God, whatever God means. And I'll talk about that very, very shortly. And that's our real problem. And the problem, as the big book will say, is to unblock the connections between what we believe in and how we think and act. If we can unblock those connections, we then have a spiritual awakening. There's an appendix appendix 2 to the big book, which was put in the second printing of the big book in 1941, which says, we hasten to tell you, it isn't necessarily sudden, immediate spiritual conversion. And that's when they changed the word spiritual experience in step 12 to spiritual awakening in step 12. Because they said, most of us have a gradual awakening in which sometimes other people see it before we see it. They define spiritual awakening as simply a personality change sufficient to overcome or combat alcoholism. That's all it is. I've had that. I don't believe in any God whatsoever. I've been in this program for a very long time. I have no God in the normal sense of any kind whatsoever. But I've had a personality change sufficient to overcome compulsive eating. And that's all that a spiritual awakening, that's the minimum of what a spiritual awakening is. Of course, there's more. There are many people who have had a conversion experience, or many people who now believe in a God they didn't believe in, or now believe in a God that they used to believe in, rejected, and now believe in again. I don't have that. I'm a third generation agnostic, skeptical as you'll ever find, and you'll never find me believing in a God on the outside. I don't mind using the word here because obviously it's of my own understanding, but I want to talk about that. So that's the chapter. There is a solution. The chapter more about alcoholism describes only the obsession. I'll talk about that and then we'll break. The obsession I've described in some detail. They give four examples. The obsession is described in the first paragraph on page 30, the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal thinker. They then describe four examples of what I like to call, in honor of Ms. Magazine of the 60s, click experiences. There are moments when, and they often talk about parallel with your sound reasoning, there exists insane reasoning. It's almost, hey, this is the birthplace of it. It's like Mickey Mouse's good angel and bad angel, or Goofy's. You know, Disney had a lot of good angel, bad angels on either shoulder. And on the one shoulder is, no, you can't have that. I won't do the voice. You can't have that. It's bad for you. It's going to kill you. This is terrible. You're already too fat. You're going to kill yourself. This is terrible. No, no, no. You said you wouldn't. You promised you wouldn't. You haven't done it for a long time. You're really doing well. Just keep going, keep going, keep going. And on the other hand, is a voice that I must tell you, ultimately reduces to, come on. You know, it's nothing different. It's not you feel terrible so you can have some. It's all these different excuses, but it's, come on. Really. No, 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 come on. No, 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 come on. No, 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 okay. Okay. You know, I mean, that's ultimately, and that's their description. So they start off with a businessman who quits for 25 years and then thinks that his 25 years of quitting now fit him to be able to have something. He dies in 4 years because he goes back to his alcoholism. I believe that. I believe that, as we say, that my illness, and by the way, I use the word illness because Bill was careful not to use the word disease. I think things are different these days, but he didn't want it to become a medical phenomenon. And so he used the word illness to keep it out of the medical realm. Well, I mean, the diagnostic statistical manual will have none of that. So they define alcoholism, they define binge eating, they define all those things in ways that do not make sense from the big book perspective. It all has to do with quantity and frequency. How much you drink, how often you drink, or how much you eat, how often you eat, and the dangers from that. They do not define it the way the big book defines the real alcoholic, which is not quantities. It's not even frequency. It's you have an allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. That's the issue. And so, anyway, that's it confuses me. Anyway, I believe that my illness is doing push-ups outside these rooms. I believe that. I believe it's stronger now that if I gave in and ate something that I couldn't eat, that I'd be back at it faster than I ever was before. And that it would get worse. It's like some of those cancers which can lie dormant for a long time, and then, or they can even be excised, and then they suddenly reappear as if they had been growing slowly all this time. So that's the businessman. The next example is Jim. Jim is the guy who owns the car dealership and used to own it. His alcoholism, he lost it. He works now for the place that he used to own. He feels resentments. He doesn't quite do the steps. He makes the beginning. He goes off to have a glass. He goes off to find a prospect. He goes to a restaurant. He has a glass of milk and a sandwich. He orders another glass of milk and a sandwich. And he says on page 36, suddenly the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. To me, that's the equivalent of whole grain, you know, organic, healthy, blessed by the, you know, yogurt blessed by the Dalai Lama. You know, I mean, it's got to be good because it's natural. And then he starts to drink again. On page 37, they say, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? And you know the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. I think erroneously attributed to Einstein. No one knows where it comes from, but it's It's been around since about the 60s or 70s, but no one knows its exact origin.
Well, someone does, but I've never been able to find it.
You may think this an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there's always a curious mental phenomenon, an unexplained occurrence, that parallel with our sound reason, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next paragraph. In some circumstances, we've gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. But even in this type of beginning, we're obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. We now see that when we began to drink deliberately instead of casually, there was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific, another example of words that changed their meaning, terrific in those days meant horrible, terrorizing consequences might be. Next example is the jaywalker, which is just such a great example of a person who continues to get hurt doing something, jaywalking, enjoys it, gets a thrill from it, and gets treatment for it, swears off, and keeps going back to it. And the Big Book says, you may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit that if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. However intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol has been involved, we have been strangely insane. It's strong language, but isn't that true? Some of you may be thinking this doesn't apply to us, they go on. Well, here's another example. The guy, the accountant, and he's told you can't so much as have one drink. Terrific, he says. I don't need the rest of your program. I just have to know I have an allergy to alcohol. I just won't drink. And he just doesn't drink. And one day he goes to Washington on a tax case. He has a great day. He's successful for his clients. He walks into the hotel. He leisurely dresses for dinner, which is an interesting phenomenon these days. And suddenly, he says on page 41, as I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. It's that simple, that insidious, that horrible. It's not just that when we're depressed or emotionally disturbed that we want to eat. Sure, that's true. But it's also that we sometimes come up with the stupidest reasons in the world. They're mentally insane reasons. And that's why I like to use, I follow the Big Book's use of the word mental rather than emotional. Because all my emotions might be in great shape and I still give myself permission to eat. I've still got that obsession. My mind has not recovered. And I think it's really important to talk about that. All right. Page 43, right at the bottom, is a summary of the whole chapter. The alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. So we'll take a break. It's 10:30, maybe 10 minutes. Would that be enough? And we'll come back. I'll do step two and step three. Thanks. I'll hand those out when it's time. Is that okay? I find them distracting when I hand them out in different times. That's okay.
I've been waiting to hear you. I'm Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
I'm a fellow Canadian.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Well, I live in Culver City now, but I'm from Nova Scotia.
Okay. Well, this is someone else from Dartmouth here. Her name is Di or Diana. Yes,
really?
She's wearing a turquoise jersey kind of.
Okay, I'll look for her.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much, and
thank
I'm going to get your tape because I'm
thank
not going to be able to hear all of it.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How late are you going to?
I'm going until 5.
I meant this morning.
I'm going until 12. I'll ask people whether they want to quit at 12 instead of 12:15.
Okay.
I'm scheduled to go until 12:15.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Breakfast was a banana that I had to have with me because I overslept.
How about a banana for breakfast?
I think it was probably better than some of the other breakfasts I've had. Better than a whole can of cashews, you know?
Yeah,
better than
yeah.
A tub of ice cream.
Yeah, I've had that for lunch.
Yeah.
I've had for breakfast a tub of ice cream and Chinese food. Leftover Chinese food. I've had that.
Oh, I don't think those go together.
They don't. Well, everything goes together.
Well, I've had Chinese food, and then about 15 minutes later,
they
then
do.
I would
yeah.
go back and get the.
I must
have.
Yeah.
We wouldn't want to mix them.
No, no. Well, I have mixed things together, but I've never mixed ice cream with Chinese food. True.
Sort of sounds disgusting.
Well, that has disgusting has never stopped me from eating.
Yeah, it's like I sort of dawned on me a while back that my name is not Shirley. Surely it would be okay. You know,
that's great.
Surely it would be okay to put some whiskey in my milk. Shirley, my name's Dorothy. It's not Shirley. That's it.
That's very good. I like that.
Morning, Lisa.
Hi.
I have never considered that fact. Would I eat a 5-pound bag of sugar straight and exactly the manner as it all?
No.
And particularly the 5-pound bag of flour. I wouldn't even dream of it. And so I'm going to have to...
It's the combination.
I'll talk to my sponsor about food plans after this weekend, and I'm going to... Look at that, because when I thought about it, you're right. It's sugar and dairy.
People say I can't eat bread. I say, is it what you put on bread? Could you eat bread by yourself? Some say yes. But it depends on the bread. I say, okay, take the hard German stuff, which is whole grain and all. Could you eat that over and over?
Yeast, water, and flour.
Yeah, and they'll say no to that. But you say, oh, yeah, there's certain kinds of bread I could eat. Those are the breads that have fat and sugar in them and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I've
the pastry breads.
I've never seen that before. It's like... My sponsor and I have a plan to get together and talk about food plans after this, because she says, we can talk about food plans at home. Go to the Big Book Workshop, not the food plan. And I will be keeping that in mind.
Well, I hate to be so provocative, but I really think it's important.
You know, I didn't think you were all that provocative, to tell you the truth. But the sponsor one, you explained it, and now I understand what you mean. And I look at that as kind of a... Like, there's an OA member who lives up so high in Alaska that she's hired in Santa Claus. And finding a sponsor, there is nothing to do there. And so what you're saying is it's not excuse.
No excuse. No excuse.
This was meant to be used.
That's right.
That I get. I think sponsors...
I say, although a sponsor, if available, is really important, you do not need a sponsor to work the steps.
Right. And now with the phone meeting, now you can get phone calls.
It's true. All right, she was first. Oh, okay, yeah.
Are you going to email correspond
yes.
to someone?
Yes, I just took this to Steph Bond.
And then the air.
Yeah. Oh, I'm doing the steps. Don't worry about that.
Okay, sure. That's what I want.
Should we pick up?
No, I'm going to hand them out. I'm going to have them. Yeah, yeah. Because I want to have them. Okay.
That's what I want.
Okay, yeah.
Do you need a break?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, well, my name's Cliff.
Hi, Cliff. Nice to meet you.
Hi. It's really good. I've heard you before. I've done some things. I really appreciate you. And being a brother of the bar, that's a good thing.
Oh, brother. Oh, my condolences.
Yeah, same here. Same here. But, I'm going to share here, right? Basically, all these materials you're using today available on that website.
Yes. Yes. And I'm going to hand out some of them all just right now, actually.
Really great. I like the way you really define abstinence. It makes me think I got to go, you know, rework that a little.
Good. Good. I'll be handing this out later.
I know. And then that's where I could contact you by,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hi.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I just wanted to share one thing with you. I have my own definition of insanity. If a newcomer comes up to you and says, you know the definition of insanity, and you think to yourself, it'll be different this time. But it never is.
That's very good. That's very, very good.
I thought I'd share that
Thank
with
you very
you.
Much. I may steal it. Yes. I'm already past that, but I may
no,
steal
no,
it from them. It'll be different. That's right.
That.
Thank you. That's good. I'll be handing them out.
Okay. And when you talk about the website, you talk about the OA website?
OABigBook.info. Maybe you came in a little late.
Okay.
I'll repeat that in the beginning.
Okay, thanks. Okay. I heard your sponsoring talk. Sponsoring talk last night.
Oh, yeah, he's not. You know, he's... We sponsor each other, as it were. But, I mean, we talk. We just talk about it. Yeah. I'm in awe of Don. How can I sponsor someone I'm in awe of?
Well, it goes around country, you know.
Yeah, true.
Sometimes you get it loose and get it back again.
Yeah. He's amazing.
OABigBook.com.
Oh, no, OABigBook.info.
Okay.
Info.
Thank you.
I'll repeat it again.
The other thing I was going to say was the whole food in meetings thing. The one thing that I don't like is I go to a community that have that group conscious. And people, you know, are not allowed to mention the food.
Oh, I'll talk about that.
They go into detail.
To describe it, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well,
like, just say the damn food.
Do you know Bob Fish?
A cold, creamy snack.
Yes, right.
Just say
Have you ever heard Bob Fisher talk? He was a chair of board of trustees for a while. Bob tells a story, and I'll probably tell it tomorrow as well. He's in a meeting, and it's a non-food, you know, and this woman describes, the speaker describes something. I think it was like round balls of something. And at the end of the meeting, three people get together and say, what was she talking about? And each one has a different interpretation of what it was. They ask her, and she has a fourth, you know.
Well, my thing is just if you go into the description, that triggers me more than just.
I think that's right. I spoke in Florida to as a keynote speaker, and I talked about my goose story. Yeah. I talked about bananas and cream, and people came up to me afterwards and said, "Do you know how much damage you have caused to the people in that room?"
Attempt to shield an alcoholic. From temptation is doomed to failure.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Your goose story. I'm off poultry for at least a
year. See, I would think the vomit story would...
The fat and salt thing.
Yeah.
That struck me because I was at the doctor's appointment a while back. And you know, she said, oh, you know, how are you doing with whatever? And I said, well, you know, a can of cashews.
That's fat and salt.
It's gone.
That's right.
She said, you know, somebody told me to eat the nuts. The unsalted, I can binge on, you know, whatever, what, salted peanuts, rolls, or whatever. Yeah. But if they don't have salt on them, she doesn't.
Yeah, see, I could binge on cashews as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, if I buy raw unsalted cashews.
Yeah, you can have six or.
I can eat a small.
Well, there you are.
Well, I can't just eat six, but I can eat a smaller quantity
at
least. I know. I'm just, it's like, it was like...
Salt has a big impact on our ability to absorb fat.
Like, it's like, my brain just goes, oh, goody, grease and salt.
That's
or,
right.
Oh, goody, grease and sugar.
That's right, exactly.
Absolutely. I was making cookies look good because we had a family. God, was that a cookie? Cookies was good. I made cookies. Then I ate them. Then I made cookie dough and I ate the dough. And then finally, over time, I said... Why the hell bother? Why not just eat the butter and the brown sugar?
Why
not just eat the butter and brown sugar? Because then we just don't have to waste all this time adding in things that aren't,
I always considered shortbread as the answer to the question, how little flour do you need to bind together butter and sugar? Until I learned about coffee, which was the real answer.
Well, yes, absolutely. Well, and I mean, you know, pie crust is like flour, lard, and salt. The three major food groups, right?
Yes. How many more?
Okay.
I'm going to begin, even though I appreciate that no one's here. But I think it's a way. Huh? Not no one's here. Not everyone is here. That's right. A line to the bathroom? Oh, well, maybe I should wait. Yeah. You know, you've heard A.G. speak, the first man in O.A.? A.G. says, it's wonderful to be a man in O.A., and then people laugh. He says, it's not what you're thinking. He says, you always have a stall in the bathroom. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, because sometimes I sleep.
Well, you should. Well, I've been to O.A. conventions where they've commandeered the men's bathroom.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite reasonable.
Yeah. You know?
Well, if there's a lineup in the bathroom, maybe I should wait a little bit longer.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Well, I know there's no lineup in the men's bathroom.
Here it's not the bathroom, it's the validated parking. That's where the long lines are.
I'll pass these out when we get more people here. Pardon me? Oh, you know what? That would be very helpful. Yeah. Well, this is one. No, this is one and this is another.
Okay.
So. Don? I saw you frowning at times. Was I saying anything that caused you to frown? Or am I too sensitive to you?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
We speak some of the same.
Of course we do.
Changes.
Yeah.
because I look at my book and it's all the same things highlighted and it's, we're saying, because I'm basically coming out of Joe and Charlie's stuff too.
Well, you'll see differences in step four, tremendous differences in step four.
Yes.
Between me and Charlie.
And of course, when you and I get to step six, seven.
Yes.
Totally
different. Yes. Totally. Well, I don't say there's anything wrong with doing it another way.
Right.
But the big book is pretty clear about how long it takes.
How long it takes?
You do it the same day?
Yeah. Why did Bill write the 12 and 12?
He was depressed.
Not the right answer. That's not what
he calls them basic essays about each step.
That's right.
He didn't say, I've learned more. He didn't say, this is a substitute for the big book. As a matter of fact, he says in the preface, introduction, this is not a substitute for the big book.
Right.
The big book is still the basic text.
But he wanted to elaborate
of course.
On some of the things that were a little short-changed yes. in the big book.
No.
My six and seven.
No. Well, anyway, we'll talk about it. We can go on.
You haven't only taken a half a paragraph.
Well, yeah, paragraph each.
Paragraph.
You know what? Is there still a lineup in the women's washroom or restroom? You guys call it a restroom here, right? We call it. Okay, you know, maybe I'll begin. But remind me when we get more people back. Assuming maybe this is it. Maybe we're not going to get anyone back. Oh, you did it. Okay, more chairs. All right. So instead of 500 people here, right now there are only about 250. I have, is it coming off?
I'm just making sure you're good.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. What's being passed out around you is stuff, please remind me to announce when we get more people here. These are among the handouts that are available on that website. So you can get anything that I'm going to be handing out. You can get a copy of it on the website. And the website, again, is oabigbook.info. oabigbook.info. Well, it's a website that I maintain. Yeah.
There's no
at anything? No, it's a .info. Yeah, the at would be an email address. And there is an email. You can contact me. There's a little place to click on. You'll also find on that website a podcast, with all due respect to our taper, that you can have for free of a 13-hour big book study I did.
We'll try to change next time.
Oh, don't worry about it. I'm doing fine. Okay. Yeah.
I'll just put these at the back.
So thank you. What you have, the two things that I've passed out, one of them is a list of promises from the big book, from each step which contains promises. And as you'll see, when I get to step five and on, I consider each one of these promises to be essential in order to know whether you finish that step. So I'll talk about that. I'll talk about that later this afternoon. The other thing you've got is what I call a schematic outline of the big book. Think of it as my interpretation of where the subdivisions should be in the text to explain why a paragraph is there as opposed to somewhere else. I did a lot of analysis of it, and I'll talk when you get to We Agnostics, which is almost immediately, you'll see why I think it's sometimes important. While people are coming in, it's going to be a little tough to talk. So I'll give it another few minutes, okay?
Thank you.
Bring him with you.